This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Just a few moments ago, President Bush made an announcement of streamlining, I guess is the best way to announce it, proposals to make it easier and quicker to collect federal benefits, both the new benefits proposed, the up to $2,000 debit card to be distributed by FEMA, and then also for those who collect federal benefits administered by the states. That's things like Medicare, child care, food stamps, housing, school lunch, unemployment compensation, programs like that, to make it easier for those people to collect those benefits, even if they're not in the state where they registered for those benefits. So this is bureaucratic streamlining. He also announced that Friday, the 16th of September, will be observed as a national day of prayer and remembrance for those who died in Hurricane Katrina. Joining us now is Carl Scott. He's the mayor of Petal, Mississippi, a small coastal town that was affected by the hurricane. He joins us by phone now from City Hall. And, Mayor, it's good of you to take the time out. We suspect you're very busy.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Just a quick reaction to the president's announcements today. Will they make it easier for you and for the people in Petal, Mississippi?
Well, I'm sure that those benefits are going to be great and beneficial to our citizens here. Our biggest problem right now is we really have no communication with FEMA. A website doesn't do you any good if you can't access the Internet, and it doesn't do you any good to call an 800 number that nobody answers. So that's our biggest problem right now is just getting in touch with somebody from FEMA.
There aren't people there on the ground from FEMA?
I have not met anybody from FEMA, other than the people that have come in to contract to pick up our trash.
So how are you recovering? Let me ask you then, what kind of help are you getting from the federal government?
Well, I'm sure that the federal government is working at the state level, and the governor's been great, and President Bush flew down to, and we had a meeting with him down in Poplarville the other day, and I know that everybody's doing everything they can. And I guess maybe I look at it a little bit different. I believe that our government starts at the local level, and that when the state and the federal government get together and decide what they want to do, that they just that the help will arrive later. But pretty much, we just try to take care of ourselves and just put our city back together, and we're doing a good job at that. And but as far as being able to communicate with them, that's our biggest issue. We just do not really have a direct contact to FEMA. The 800 number does not work for us. You can call it 3,000 times, and at the end it just says, we'll just, due to the high call volume, we'll get back with you, or you have to call back again, and it's a click-off, and you're gone.
Mm-hmm. We've also heard from many of the communities there that fuel has been a tremendous problem.
Fuel was a tremendous problem up front, and I think that was one of those things where the state and the federal level could have done a little bit better job, because we'd get a message one day, and you'd gear up to make that happen. The next day, we'd get a different story, and you'd gear up and make that happen, and then you'd have to go back and do something else. Well, that's all settled out now, so fuel is not no longer in a crisis situation. But there, for 4 or 5 days, it was just a real confusing issue.
I can understand that. Have you been able to? So you're getting fuel to obviously bulldozers, backhoes, that sort of thing. The equipment you need to clear up.
That's all happening now. Everything is it's straightened itself out. That first week was just really. I just think there was a lot of miscommunication. And probably, when you can't communicate, it just makes it hard for everybody to get on the same page and make things happen. So the little information that you get, you gear up to do, and then the next day you get a different set of information, so you gear up to do that, and it just, now that's pretty much settled out, and they're doing a good job of getting us fuel, everything we need to make everything, put ourselves back together.
Mayor, I'm glad to hear that things have at least worked out to that degree, and I hope that your communications problems do get resolved as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's what we really need to work on. I would like to take an opportunity just to say that, there's a whole group of people out there that need to be thanked just outside of Mississippi. We've had relief aid come in from Arizona, from Kansas, from Missouri, Florida, Alabama, Indiana, and it's been in all different kinds. So we've got Indiana State Troopers here. We've got Mississippi Power people here that have come from Canada and Pennsylvania. The response has been tremendous at the ground roots level. So they're just, you just can't thank these people enough. It's really been a humbling experience for us that had to endure what's happened to us down here.
Mayor Scott, thanks very much for being with us today.
All right, thank you, sir.
Carl Scott, mayor of Petal, Mississippi, and he joined us by phone from his office in City Hall. David Weldon joins us now, NPR congressional correspondent. He's with us from Capitol Hill. Good of you to be with us, David.
Hi, Neil.
I know you heard the president just a few moments ago, and how at least one Democrat has responded, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California. What'd she have to say?
Yes, Nancy Pelosi, in fact, has been probably the most vocal critic of the administration's response to Hurricane Katrina. She said right after the president spoke that she thought it was good that FEMA was getting more of its resources in place. She said it's about time. It should have been happening a week ago. And she continued to hit hard on Michael Brown, the director of FEMA, saying that he should resign and that while the FEMA workers in the region are doing a good job, they don't have the kind of leadership that they need. She was joined in the call for Brown to step down by New York Democrat Charles Schumer, a Senate Democrat, who sent out a letter to supporters today demanding that Brown be fired. So I guess Democrats are looking at this in many ways as a kind of an opportunity to critique the administration's handling both of the hurricane, but also of the what they see as a kind of a cronyism in the Bush administration, exemplified by Michael Brown, who they say is not qualified for the job.
And Michael Brown, a lawyer who was previously the head of, what was it, the Arabian Horse Association?
The International Arabian Horse Association, indeed.
Though, as Michael Chertoff, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, pointed out, last year he did have the experience of leading the relief teams and the operations at FEMA through three hurricanes in Florida, so experience is a relative term. There have also been calls on Capitol Hill for investigations. Last night, the Republican leadership called for a joint bipartisan committee, which sounded good. Then today we heard, again, it was Minority Leader Pelosi and then Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the Senate, said nobody asked us about this.
Indeed. In fact, I spoke with Senate Minority Leader Reid yesterday, right after the announcement of this joint inquiry. And he said that he got a phone call from his counterpart, Majority Leader Bill Frist, just a couple of minutes before the announcement was made. He had no details about it. Today, he said that he did not think it was in the best interest of the American people to have such a Republican-led inquiry. He said, I do not support it, and as currently described, I will not appoint members to it. Now, Republicans are saying that in many ways this joint inquiry is like the Iran-Contra inquiry back in the 1980s, which was regarded as highly successful. What they omit, though, is the fact that inquiry was led by democratically controlled House and Senate chambers, and we had a Republican in the White House at the time. The big difference this time, of course, is that you have Republicans in charge of both the White House and both chambers of Congress. So they're saying you have to have an outside commission, and that's what they're demanding.
And at the same time, there would be, and the administration said that there would be a government investigation into what went wrong and what went right in terms of the response and the planning for Hurricane Katrina. And the Democrats are saying that is the administration investigating itself.
Yes. In fact, Reid says that's like having a baseball pitcher calling the balls and strikes. He said that's not how we do things in America. And now their call for an independent commission is not receiving much support from Republicans on Capitol Hill. But I think there's a certain wariness among Republicans, too, about the lack of any kind of support from Democrats for this announced joint inquiry. They need some kind of support from Democrats for this. And so far, none is really stepping forward to sign on to this.
Has there been a response from the Republican congressional leadership to the complaints from the Democrats that they've been excluded from the whole planning for this?
Well, I think that Republican leaders are making the argument that it is very inefficient to have, as they put it, 85 different investigations going on Capitol Hill, in fact, it would just tie up a lot of officials who would otherwise be devoting their efforts to relief operations, having to come up and testify before all these different committees. But I think there is a question about whether the model of the 9/11 commission that was set up after considerable resistance from the White House House for months. President Bush finally gave in to that, and what came out was a real bipartisan commission with equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans on it that issued a report that was highly respected, and I think that we're going to continue to see pressure to form such a commission, especially coming from the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Obviously 9/11, but there was a very conscious show of national unity and bipartisan support for the president in the aftermath of 9/11. This crisis, this one seems different.
It is very different. The mood on Capitol Hill this time is fractious. There's acrimony in both chambers. And I think a lot of it has to do with the nature of what happened. 4 years ago, it was an outside enemy that attacked the United States. And it really brought together people who had been at each other's throats before then. This time, it was something that was predicted by many experts. And in fact, many people who weren't experts knew that there was a huge danger of New Orleans being inundated. And all fingers of blame were starting to point towards Washington and saying, what was going on? Who was responsible for this? And you know, when you're the party in power, especially when you control both the White House and Congress, you're the one who's going to be blamed for this. And I think that's what's happened on Capitol Hill. The dynamic here is that Republicans are on the defensive and Democrats are on the offensive. They think that there's a political opening for them here. The kinds of things that people are demanding from the government, social services, assistance. These are things that Democrats have championed for years and that Republicans have been downsizing in their budgets. And in many ways, Democrats right now are saying, we told you so.
Mm-hmm. David Wellner, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Neil.
David Wellner joining us from Capitol Hill, NPR's congressional correspondent. Ron Elving is still with us here in Studio 3A. And Ron, before we let you go, a question. He was talking about this Democrat seeing an opportunity, this new offensive. Is there any sense that this is going to spill over? Next week you have a confirmation hearings for Judge John Roberts to replace William Rehnquist as Chief Justice of the United States. Is this atmosphere going to spill over into those sorts of considerations as well?
It's not immediately apparent how the Katrina disaster would influence the John Roberts nomination. We do have a totally separate procedure by which the Senate holds hearings for the Senate Judiciary Committee to question the nominee. It's impossible to see how Katrina or anything having anything to do with the hurricane aftermath could be relevant to the kinds of questions that the Senate Democrats or the Senate Republicans have been planning to ask him. Now, could they stretch it and say, is there anything that you've learned, Mr. Roberts, from the Katrina disaster and the government's response to it that makes you alter your philosophy of what government should do for people? I suppose you could have that kind of a stretch or a reach, but it doesn't really lend itself to being a transferable issue. Now, there are a number of other issues hanging fire on Capitol Hill right now, including the estate tax, whether or not that's going to be made eliminated permanently. There's the issue of Medicaid, $10 billion in Medicaid spending cuts that were supposed to be accomplished this very week. Neither of those two things is being taken up by Congress this week, and both of them might be indefinitely postponed, in part because of the change of national sympathy that we're seeing in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. So issues of that kind, mm-hmm. I think, will show a lot of impact.
Yeah, we've also heard about proposed changes in the bankruptcy procedures, and obviously another looming situation is the deficit. Just a couple of weeks ago announced that it was going to be smaller than previously thought. Now it's going to be considerably larger than previously thought. So again, there's going to be questions about further tax cuts and permanent tax cuts. And Ron Elving, thanks very much for being with us. I suspect we'll be back with you before very long.
Thank you, Neil.
And NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving with us here in Studio 3A. President Bush was announcing measures to help evacuees today. Associated Press national writer Todd Lewin has been tracking where all those people have gone when they left New Orleans, other areas of Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. He's the author of The Last Run, a true story of rescue and redemption on the Alaskan seas. He joins us now from Houston, Texas. Good of you to join us today.
Thank you, Neil. It's good to be with you.
Obviously, Houston, at least at first, was the destination for many of the evacuees. What's happened since they arrived?
Well, Houston certainly is the gateway for many of the evacuees that have been since last week, rippling around the country. Here in Texas has taken in about half of the half million or so refugees. At this point, Arkansas has taken in about 60 to 70,000 in shelters, motels, private homes. Louisiana's got about 55,000 plus. Mississippi, about 20,000. Alabama, 6,000. Missouri, 4,000. So many of them are in states that are around Louisiana, of course, and Mississippi. But some have gone to states as far off as Florida, New Jersey, California.
Are people staying in the shelters once they get there, or are they then getting there and looking for other better places to stay?
Well, people in the first week after the storm hit, who came to Houston were staying in the Astrodome, the Reliant Center, the Brown Convention Center. Those numbers have been dropping off dramatically in the last couple of days. People have been finding shelters in shelter in churches, in the homes of Good Samaritans, people on the street who are passing by the convention centers and offering help from the car windows, and also through housing agencies here in the city.
And in general, have they been able to work with agencies such as the Red Cross to register for all of these services? We heard about some confusion, particularly at the Astrodome, after the announcement of these $2,000 debit cards.
It's been very, very difficult for the people who most need help, the people who couldn't get out of Louisiana, who didn't have cars, who didn't have money to get out of the state. It's most difficult for them to get help. They're told that to get into an apartment, they won't have to put down a security deposit. But they still have to pay the first month's rent, and they don't have the money to do that. And when they go to the convention center and stand on a line that's five blocks long, waiting for hours in 90-degree heat and the sun, when they're in the Astrodome queuing up, since 5 a.m., 6 a.m. today, there were lines of people queuing up for debit cards, for cash. Invariably, what happens is, at some point, 1, 2 hours, 3 hours into the wait, someone in a police officer or a volunteer will come along with a megaphone and say, "Sorry, we're not taking any more requests today. Come back tomorrow or go online," and they'll give them a website, www.redcross.gov or whatever, and most of these people look at each other confused. I mean, they don't know what www is. They don't have laptops. They don't have they're computer illiterate in a sense, many of them. I mean, I saw this personally because I was standing on some of these lines and watching these people's expressions of confusion.
Just a clarification, Todd Lewin. You were talking about the evacuees, people who had been flown out or bussed out from the places like New Orleans. Right. There are also hundreds of thousands who self-evacuated.
Right. People who, in the days leading up to the storm, were able to get out, drive out, stay with family and friends in neighboring states. Yeah.
So they may or may not qualify for that special evacuee status, but many of them will be needing government services as well.
Well, exactly, and this is one of the reasons why the lines are indeed swelling outside of these convention centers on these emergency shelters, because they too have drained their accounts, drained the money, their disposable cash, and they need money to get into housing of their own to restart their lives.
Todd Lewin, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate
your
time.
Thank you.
Todd Lewin is a writer for the Associated Press and the author of The Last Run, a true story of rescue and redemption on the Alaska seas. We'd also like to thank NPR Washington editor Ron Elving for being with us today, and also NPR correspondents David Green at the White House and David Wellner up at Capitol Hill. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News.